Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Bringing you the latest research, tools, and common sense tips you need to get and stay healthy. It's Talk Healthy Today. Here's Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
So now we found out some of the foods that may just be our enemy. Now what do we do? Well, food sensitivity pioneer Roger Deutsch brings great information that can help all of us understand what it's like to live with food sensitivities and live with allergies. You'll discover easy tips for avoiding problematic foods, what to do if you accidentally ingest one of these problem foods, and also some of the resources for, you know, shopping and cooking and even eating out at restaurants and even friends' houses. Parents will also get great tips on raising kids with food sensitivities and allergies, whether they're at home, a school, or a birthday party. So hopefully some of this information, I think, will be some really good tools for all of us, because this is something we need to be aware of, yet it's also something that doesn't get as much focus as it should. Roger, when people find out that they have an allergy or a sensitivity and they start to work their world around it, is there ever a time when some people are going to have a certain amount of it in their diet, or does it need to be a closed door with those foods, maybe for better success?
With sensitivities, things can change, and over time, with improvement of general health and avoiding trigger foods, there can be a healing in the gut and a repair of the permeability that may have been present in the gut and had been contributing to sensitivities, because it hasn't been excluding effectively the not fully digested food particles, and detoxification can improve if nutrition is better and a person's overall health is improved, and therefore it is possible that in a lot of cases, a food that was previously a problem can, after time, be reintroduced and tolerated to a certain degree, and maybe to a great degree. And it's only determined by experimentation or testing again. But about half the time, we do see that a food can be reintroduced after maybe 6 months.
Now, I guess one of the things that I think a lot of people have a hard time realizing is that the way that our foods are put together today, you know, it seems like if you shop the perimeter of your grocery store, you know, which is something I recommend to a lot of people, you know what you're getting. Because most of the time you're getting something that you're putting in a bag or already is packaged, but you know what's in it. I mean, if it's a chicken breast, it's a chicken breast. If it's lettuce, it's lettuce. If it's, you know, basically, you know, individual things, we know what they are. In the middle of the store, you may buy a product that has so many things in it. Some of the things could be those allergens mixed in those blended process combinations. So the basic nature of our food becomes more of an importance, but also knowing what's in the food you're eating. And it almost seems like you have to create a palate for food that you really know a lot about, because you can't really have that flexibility to eat out as much when you don't know what they're putting in the food in the kitchen.
Well, that's true. You know, of course, you know, you can't always cook for yourself, although that's the best thing. It's really nice if there are some restaurants where you live that, you know, prepare meals from whole, organic, healthful foods, and you can get gluten-free options and so forth, or simpler meals that have fewer ingredients. But I completely agree with you. When you get into the higher levels of consumption of processed foods, there's so many different chemicals in there, and the nutrients of the contained within the processed foods have been depleted, and it may have been produced out of foods that weren't that high quality to begin with. And so I completely agree with you. Going around the edge of the store and staying away from the middle is certainly a good guideline.
You know, I have a friend that was so allergic to so many different kinds of foods, and yet understandably she was, most of her diet was processed pre-boxed, pre-made, reconstituted food, and she wasn't eating a lot of good foods. And I've told this story many times on my other shows, where she had moved to Greece, and she was there for a year on a scholarship, and she had to basically eat the diet that was there, which is basically Mediterranean, and she was eating beautiful grains and lots of fruits and fish and vegetables and, you know, getting outside, drinking plenty of water. There was no junk food where she was, and she had to actually walk to the little village to get her food. Because she didn't have a car, so she really got kind of absorbed into this lifestyle. But her health dramatically changed when she removed all of these foods, and her body adapted to this really healthy way of eating, and, you know, became an environmental change for her, but it also was a complete, you know, food change for her from top to bottom. And she's a completely different person. She came back to the States and was here a couple months and tried to adapt, and the foods just made her so ill from the get-go. She's now back there, living there, and her life is in Greece, and she lives that lifestyle, and she's unbelievably healthy. So maybe we have a little bit of control. We just have to have the answers and hopefully, you know, follow the people that are giving us the information and the knowledge to follow.
Well, that's right. I mean, having a healthy diet, healthy lifestyle, there's no better means for prevention of disease. And true also, when you've done that for a while and then you come back to an environment where the food is, it's not as easy to get healthy food, and you're behind the computer and you're behind the wheel of the car, and you're not outside in the fresh air as much, you feel a difference. That's it. That's the major thing.
Now, how do we address children with food allergies and food sensitivities? Do kids progress through stages, you know, like, well, learning how to walk, learning how to go to the bathroom? Are some of these just part of the growing process that they move, segue through, or do some of them they carry with them into their adult years?
Well, you know, here again, a lot of factors that occur at birth and how a child is born, whether through a natural birth or a cesarean birth, can have an effect for even the whole lifetime because of the exposures during the birth process to good bacteria that is experienced normally through natural childbirth. So that's certainly a factor. What foods they're introduced to, I mean, so many studies have shown that breastfeeding in early life confers signals to the development of the immune system and a population of the gut with healthier bacteria than formula feeding. So those things are important. But if you didn't get that, well, it can be addressed later on in life. What you just mentioned about processed food versus whole food and healthy food, that applies to everybody at all stages, especially younger kids. There's more vulnerability, I think, to the system of younger kids to toxins. There's factors that, for example, food colorings. Back in the 60s, I don't know if many people would remember, there was a big splash in the news where there was a physician advising that food colorings were causing mental developmental problems and hyperactivity in children back in the 60s. And now we know that food colorings, these dyes, will actually inhibit an enzyme called phenylsulfonyl transferase P, which will break down a toxin that occurs in the gut. The toxin is called crestyltate. If it's not broken down, it becomes neurotoxic. So you have a natural balance in your body, you have an ecology, you have a population of commensal inhabitants, microorganisms, good bacteria, that actually have an aggregate genome, which is 10 times more diverse than our own genome. And they're sending signals for development and back and forth to the immune system and to the neuroendocrine system. And you want to let that develop in a natural way. So natural childbirth, breastfeeding, wholesome, healthy foods, activity, and limitations on the things that are that are less healthy. And that's, I think, the important thing to do. And then, of course, on top of that, anybody can have a sensitivity to a food, even if their genes are fantastic. And it could be anything. When I test myself, I've found over the last several years that for whatever reason, I have a sensitivity to cucumbers and also to basil. So I don't eat it. But the last time, by accident, I drank a vegetable juice that had a fair amount of cucumber in it. I was kind of distracted at work. Gosh, 8 hours later, in the middle of the night, I had such intense spasming in my intestines. It was extraordinarily painful, and I then made the connection. Otherwise, I was just thinking, well, gee, I wonder why the test is showing me that. But it just shows it can be anything. The immune system's complex. And we're talking here, again, not just about allergy, but intolerances. And this is driven by our genes, which are unique, and our nutritional status, and the integrity of our gut, and who's inhabiting our gut. So that's why I like this test, because it takes you as you are right now, and it shows that if there's a biological response to a substance. And that's kind of the bottom line.
Is it common for people to have different food group allergies at the same time?
Yes. Sensitivities.
Yes.
You mean, yes? Yes, it can be. It can be that a person has a sensitivity to casein in dairy products as well as chemicals that are in potatoes, and they're not typically related, as well as to a chemical that's in celery. And again, that's what's so nice about this test, is that you can test all these different things and remove the guesswork.
You know, there are some foods, I have sensitivities to some foods as well, and I know that when I eat them, sometimes I'll notice the difference or my body reacting to it quickly. Sometimes it could be, like you said, the middle of the night. It could be a day later, 2 days later, and I'll see a change. You know, there's something going on. I mean, I know kind of what to stay away from, but we forget, we get busy, like you mentioned. You know, we get a little careless sometimes. You know, we're preoccupied, and before you know it, you know, we've got things that are in our individual columns that we shouldn't be eating, and we do it anyway.
Exactly. Life happens.
True.
And that's another thing that has to be managed. And what we do is, the laboratory is called Cell Science Systems, and that's what we do. We measure cells, and we actually develop the systems for it. We actually build the instrumentation to do the test, and we actually manufacture the food substances and the other chemicals and so forth. So we have control over all that. Then on the back end, we started another organization, which is called PreviMedica. And the purpose of PreviMedica is to help people find their way to adopting the changes that the diagnostics recommend. So there's registered dietitians and dietetic counselors who one-on-one counsel people about implementing the dietary changes. And that's very effective, and we try and make that, and it's available, it's through the internet, kind of a Skype-like program, but it's more secure. And you have your own counselor. And you also get information about recipes that you can make. And we also put a lot of people go to the website at PreviMedica.com. And we teach, and going to the website and downloading this, of course, is all free, recipes and alternate recipes with healthy foods, but they taste good. So you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. And I think that's the big thing. You don't have to. There are ways to make adaptations and accommodations to diet and eat well.
And what was that webpage they can go to again?
It's called Previ Medica, and it's spelled just like it sounds, PREVIMEDICA.com.
And there's also a website for ALCAT. Is there ALCAT.com as well?
There is, ALCAT.com.
Okay. Today we're talking a lot about food sensitivities and food allergies. Remember to stay up to date on each and every show by liking our Facebook page or follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Let us know what your favorite healthy habit is and then listen in. You might just hear it mentioned on the show. So for more information on food allergies, sensitivities, and other great information, health, and of course, everything as it relates to health and wellness topics, check out my favorite magazine, Better Nutrition, at your local health food store. Packed with well-researched articles, recipes, and tips, it's an indispensable resource for healthy living. Pick up your copy today. And don't forget about some of those web pages that Roger just mentioned, the PreviMedica.com, ALCAT.com. Those are some places for great information. And you got to get a copy of the book, Your Hidden Food Allergies Are Making You Fat, How to Lose Weight and Gain Years of Vitality. That's a great book for your library. And, you know, a question that keeps coming to mind, I start thinking to myself, you know, as we get older, if we've had food allergies, let's say, in our younger years, and as we get to our maybe 30s, 40s, and 50s, when we get much older, do we outgrow them with age?
I don't know if it's a question of outgrowing, but they can change for a number of different reasons, a lot that we've addressed before. But people can have food adverse reactions to foods well into their advanced ages.
Well, what should parents tell their kids if their kids have food sensitivities and allergies? Is there maybe some tips they can tell their kids, you know, what to watch for if you're at a birthday party or at school, things you maybe should stay away from, maybe some across-the-board things for some of the kids to look for?
Well, you know, it's the things that we do every day that have the greatest impact. unfortunately, telling the kids is one thing. Educating the kids, and they tend to follow what the parents' habits are, is the most important.
True, very
so
true.
So you can't do anything better than inculcate in your kids, by example, healthy living habits, healthy dietary habits, getting sleep, you know, at an earlier time, waking up at an earlier time, lots of exercise, less stress, lots of positive social interaction, all these things. It sounds easy to say them, and sometimes it's easy to do, and sometimes it takes a little bit more effort, but it's worth it. Those are the things that create health.
If you have a food sensitivity and you accidentally ingest one of your problem foods, anything we can do?
Not really. Hmm. There were some a belief that taking bicarbonate soda can help that, and it may with some digestive upset. But no, you kind of have to maybe just learn from the experience and double down on efforts to avoid it in the future. But no, it'll pass.
Now, peanut allergies are different.
Yeah.
These are big ones. And this is ones that, I mean, I have a friend of mine and her children are all peanut allergy sensitive. And, you know, they carry EpiPens with them. They know how to ask for food. They know what to ask if they go to the restaurant about peanuts in the foods. I mean, they at least go out of their way. She has educated them very, very well. Obviously, things are going to slip into the foods once in a while. I'd like you to talk a little bit. You know, we were talking in between the break about peanut allergies. There's a reason why we have peanut allergies and why they're so bad.
Yeah. Somehow, what they call the epitope, which is the allergenic portion of the substance, it has some chemical similarity to patterns that are expressed on worms, and so it triggers this IgE-mediated classical allergic response where the antibodies are bound with this antigenic epitope and the mast cells, which are present in the mucosal linings of the body, and basophils, which are similar to mast cells that also contain a lot of histamine that are in the circulation. When they get triggered, they can cause the degranulation, is what it's called, of the mast cell and the basophils, and the release of histamine. And that histamine causes that contraction of smooth muscles, which could be the trachea, could be the intestines. People get cramps from crustaceans, shrimp and so forth, crabs, lobster. And then also irritation to the nerve endings, increased mucus production. These things are associated with allergy. And what's really interesting is that sometimes it'll occur only when the body's temperature is raised. There's a model called exercise-induced asthma, where, again, it's an IgE-mediated phenomenon. It's allergic. But only when the body's temperature gets raised from the exercise does the exposure to the food actually induce the asthmatic reaction. So that can be a cofactor. Once part of the body starts to react, and it could happen just as soon as the peanut touches the lips, the nervous system releases a substance called substance P, and that's transmitted through the central nervous system to the peripheral nervous system throughout the whole body, and then the mast cells start releasing histamine all over the place, and that's why you get a rapid anaphylactic reaction. So you're right. You have to avoid it, and accidents do happen, and you have to have an EpiPen handy. And an EpiPen contains epinephrine or adrenaline, and that counteracts the effect of histamine. Then you have to go to the hospital. That's not what the Alcat test measures, but that's a clear-cut example of an adverse reaction to a food.
You know, you kind of wonder if people are out there walking around, which I'm sure they are, with food sensitivities and have never, ever, ever put their finger on exactly what the problem is. They may just think it's an acid level in their stomach, or, you know, they're nervous. They have a nervous stomach, and they've never, ever even pointed themselves in the direction of a food sensitivity.
Absolutely. I'll give you one example. Many years ago, I was interviewing a lady for a position in my company, and I said, "Why don't you have the test?" And she said, "Well, you know, why not? I never thought about it." So we did her test, and it showed that she had a strong reaction to lamb. And it's interesting because lamb is considered, or used to be considered, lamb and pears were so non-problematic that when you created an elimination diet to just find out, you know, get a baseline where you know, eat foods that were totally safe, and then you can add them one at a time to see which ones trigger reactions. Lamb and pear were the two ones, so no one would suspect it. Anyway, so she said, when I gave her the report, she said, "That's wrong. I love lamb." I said, "Well, look, you know, why don't you try it?" And she goes, "Well, you know, maybe I get migraine headaches." So I said, "Look, why don't you just try avoiding lamb?" So that was easy enough. She did that, and her migraine headaches went away. And she thought, "That doesn't make any sense. I love lamb. How is that possible?" And so she ate lamb, and bam, the headache came back with a vengeance, and she became a believer. So we do see that. People have no clue. People get the test report and think, "This is not going to work," and then they try it, and they feel more energetic, less the achiness or less fatigue or fogginess or something that they wouldn't necessarily even think to go for a test for. You know, they just presume that's the way they feel, and that goes away, and it happens. You know, it's interesting because fatigue, You know, when you get the flu, you feel really tired and
achy? Sure.
Well, the chemicals that the immune system cells are releasing, they make you feel fatigued. And it's good to feel fatigued because then you rest. And you use you marshal the body's resources instead of for activity, for repair and overcoming the infection. But you don't want chronic infection against the food that you're eating every day or several times a week to be there. That's pathological. So that happens, and that happens all the time, and people have no clue.
You know, today we've talked a lot about food allergies, food sensitivities, and things we should be aware of. Obviously, learning this information, maybe taking the LCAT test would be a really good idea. You know, go to LCAT.com, go to PreviMedica.com, read some of the great books that are available. Don't forget to pick up your copy of Better Nutrition Magazine at fine health food stores everywhere. But look into some of these ideas and some of these wonderful this wonderful information that could find out whether some of the foods that you're loving every day, your palate may enjoy, but your body may be rebelling. So it is truly something that you need to take a look at. And yes, sometimes you're going to have to restructure the foods that you're eating. That's okay. There's plenty of other foods out there. Sometimes we have to just kind of realize that we've used up our tolerance of that individual food. So make sure that you're doing everything you possibly can. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Burke, and this is Talk Healthy Radio Show on Radio MD. For more information on this and all of my segments, remember to go to my radio show page at Radio MD. Look for the Talk Healthy Today page for the on-demand podcast of the show. Thanks for listening, and be well.